You're listening to the Mythgreen Podcast with your hosts, Oren Ashkenazi, Wes Matlock, and Chris Winkle. There was a castle by a waterfall with a pink and purple wall and a princess living there. She had no parents and was all alone. She got by on her own and she liked it pretty well. Cause she never wore socks. She had a pet snake. She bought a red guitar and she ate a whole cake. And there wasn't anybody there. Tell her what to do, so she did what she wanted to. Everybody knew the story of the princess who saved herself.
This episode was made possible by the support of our patron, Kathy Ferguson, professor of political theory in Star Trek.
Hello, and welcome to the Mythcreant Podcast. I'm your host, Wes, and with me is...
Oren.
And returning for another adventure in podcasting is...
Hey, this is Ari. Feels like I didn't like I never left.
Yeah.
No, you've basically just been here all week.
Oh, yeah.
It's been pretty great.
Yeah, I mean, they found me on the street, so now I just live there. I've been, you know, claim squatter's rights, all that.
We just walked outside absolutely. And screamed, "Does anybody know anything about long series?" And Ari answers, "Enough for two podcasts."
I have enough for significantly more on the pace that we went in the first one. But I will try and be more brief in my talking. I like to talk a lot.
That's not a problem. All right, so I want to talk to you both about a serious problem that many of our favorite book series have, which is called series bloat.
Mm-hmm.
This is when, as a book goes on, it tends to gather up more and more stuff, and particularly characters, but also, like, you know, setting elements and factions, and eventually, by the time the book reaches the end, it is so full of stuff that it just, you know, the books get longer and longer and less happens.
Yep.
Yes.
That is the problem.
Yeah. And I, like, no long book series that I've read has been completely immune to it. But I think that the worst offender is probably Wheel of Time. Like, that one is even diehard fans generally admit that book by the end has, like, point of view for, like, every person that Rant has ever met, and that's part of the reason why it takes so long to finish, right? I'd actually say that a book series that did it, that avoided it for the most part, at least for the parts that I read, was the Dresden Files.
Yes, I would agree with that. I actually think Jim Butcher's quite good at this, because mm-hmm. the Codex Alera is another series he wrote, his just high fantasy series. It's not quite as long, I think it's 5 books, but they pretty much keep a consistent cast of characters through the entire book. Like, they don't really expand it much past the first one. And I think that something Butcher is good at is making sure that he expands the characters that we have, mm-hmm. rather than trying to introduce new characters to kind of fill those holes. And I think that really helps. Just, it makes you more attached to the characters that exist, and also avoids the massive problem that Wheel of Time had, was where there was just so many characters. And I already have a hard time with character names, so books mm-hmm. like that just lose me real fast.
Yeah, well, one of the advantages that Dresden Files had was, I mean, first of all, it was first person.
Yep.
Right, so, like, Butcher was never tempted to run off on a long tangent from some other character's point of view, right? Because it was always Dresden. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, if you didn't like Dresden, that was a problem. But otherwise, it really helped avoid, like, okay, well, now Dresden's met this witch, and now she needs her own point of view, and now he's met this, like, vampire guy who needs his point of view, et cetera, right? We avoided that problem. It also helped that, if I recall correctly, and Ari, you've read the Dresden Files more often than I have, but if I recall correctly, what usually happened is that he would introduce characters for, like, one book, and then those characters would often cycle out. And then, like, over time, like, a handful of the really important ones would stick around?
Yes, that would be correct. Like, pretty much the only character that's consistent from book one is Murphy.
Yeah, she's basically always there.
And she's pretty much in there through the whole series. And then there are characters like Thomas, who gets introduced, and I think maybe he's introduced in the first or the second book. But he doesn't show up again and become a main character until significantly later. And then he kind of does that for a lot of... So we had kind of a taste for that character. And then we go without them for a little while, and then they kind of come back.
Yeah, usually it helps because most of the book's plot structures are based around, like, some one-time event that's like happening in Chicago. And I mean, I granted, after a while you start to wonder how many one-time super events just happen to be where Dresden lives. Mm-hmm. But you know, at the time, each book is kind of a one-time thing, so it's like, okay, so it makes sense that this character would show up for that event and then would leave, and like he has other things to do. Yeah. Right, like there's a whole world out there that needs magic stuff happening in it.
Yeah, I think the best example of this was probably Michael, who's one of the Knights mm-hmm. of the Cross. And Dresden yeah. even, like, specifically mentions in some of them, he's where he's like, you know, Michael is at his strongest when he's dealing with, like devil stuff. Like stuff that touches on his religion. So he doesn't want to call him for, like, spooky, normal magic things. Because he doesn't want Michael to get hurt, because Michael has less protection when he's dealing with that stuff. Which I think was a nice way to say, why don't you just call the dude with the broadsword over every time you needed, like, some muscle.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of a big part of Dresden's character, is that kind of thinking.
Yeah, and I mean, because it's first person, there was like an easy way to understand all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And like, a lot of the side characters in Dresden, again, like many of them fulfill like a very specific purpose.
Yes.
Like, you know, it's like, hey, I need a corpse examined. I'm gonna go talk to Butters.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you don't call Butters if you need to fight vampires. That's not what he's for, right?
Butters is for examining
corpses.
Well, Arne,
you obviously have not read the later books, because Butters does become a main fighting force by the end.
Yeah, I stopped reading at the end of, what was it? Changes was the book that I didn't read.
Changes was actually really good. I think Changes is probably my favorite book of the Dresden Files. It very much lives yeah. up to its name. But I can understand why you were done at that point.
I didn't read Changes, and I remember Changes had the title because you would give me unrelenting amounts of crap for not reading Changes. I remember this much.
Yep.
Maybe one day I'll get back to it. Like, my biggest issue with the Dresden Files was that even though it's a very tight plot-wise, it's Dresden as a character is a little too static for me. But, like, maybe that's different after Changes.
They do go through... I'm not sure if he would change enough for you. I know mm-hmm. you have a lot of critical opinions about Dresden as a character.
Yeah.
Which I share some of them, definitely. But the book did a really good job of kind of gradually piling things up on Dresden until literally, you know, he has to do, I don't want to spoil that for folks who are interested in the Dresden Files, but mm-hmm. he has to do a bad thing.
Yeah.
To basically give himself the ability to continue fighting. And I that's why I love that book so much, is because it really lives up to the name of Changes. And it's kind of a turning point in the series, which if we want, we could kind of talk about some of the cons, because we've been talking a lot about a lot of the strengths of series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But one of the ones that I've noticed, it's present in Dresden Files, it's present in the Honorverse, which are the two ones that I've read the most, which is, it feels like we reached a point in the series where we got to the end of what the author originally intended to write. In the Dresden Files, it was the end of the war with the vampires. And in Honorverse, it was the Battle of Manticore, where Honor was supposed to have died. That was supposed to have been the end. She was based off of some real-life general who basically died on the eve of his greatest victory.
Nelson, probably.
Yeah. She was based off of that general, and she was supposed to have died there. But according to the author, it was because of people responded so negatively to her dying that he kept her alive. But basically, the stories continued after those books. And I do feel like the quality suffered Dresden Files, because I just don't really know if Butcher had planned to write anymore. Whereas David Weber had planned basically to do a big time jump and pick up the story in the same universe with Honor's kids and the next generation, as kind of a pressure valve to reset the power creep that had been going on with Honor's character. But because she was still alive, they didn't do that. And so they continued along with her as the main character, but she was already like a top level admiral at that point. So there wasn't really anywhere for her to go. And I still think the books are good, but there is definitely a noticeable like gear shift that would have made a lot more sense had there been a time jump and a new cast of characters.
We really need to look into reviewing books and characters that like the fans refuse to let die. Right? Yep. We brought up Sherlock Holmes in the previous podcast, and here we are again. It's like, no, I want to be done with this character, and all this like hate mail comes in. It's like, you have to keep this one.
Gold Ducat, is that you? Tell me more.
Yeah, no. Although, quick refresher: the Vampire War ends in the book right before Changes, right? Because I'm pretty sure I read to the end of the Vampire War.
crap, I can't remember. I want to say, I don't know, I think it ends in Changes.
Okay, well, I must have read Changes at some point then, because I read the end of The Vampire War, and I agree, that feels like the end of the series. Even though, like, there had been, like, a secondary bad guy that was being built up in the background, there was just, like, the vampires were just much more of a immediate and, like, you know, interesting antagonist.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, this the shadow bad guy was, like, they've been around for so long, and they're so, like, they're still really undefined that it's, I'm a little bit out of patience with them by this point, right?
Yeah, I think Changes, because Dresden has to basically make the metaphorical deal with the devil to have the strength to confront the vampires.
Okay, so I did read Changes then.
I could be wrong. If someone who knows the Dresden File book names by heart, you know, yell at me in the comments or email Oren, and you know, he'll yell at me for you guys.
Right. Another book series, if we want to talk about like where they should have just ended, that really comes to mind is the Belgorad series.
Oh, I barely remember those. Weren't they the one with the chess titles for all of their things, like Queen's Gambit and something's Pawn or something like that? Was that that series? Or is that the Mandalorian series, which came after the Belgorad series?
Okay, so there was the Belgorad series, and then there was the Mandalorian series. Yeah. And I remember that like the first book of the Belgorad is called The Pawn of Prophecy.
Okay.
So you could very well be right. They might all be chess titles. The books really blend together.
Yeah.
For me. But there, it's you know, it's a pretty formulaic fantasy story, right? Where like you've got your single trait fantasy kingdoms, mm-hmm. and we of course you know you have Knight Kingdom, Archer Kingdom, Money Kingdom, Sneaky Kingdom, and like Berserker Kingdom, if I recall correctly. Oh, and there's like Nice Guy Kingdom.
I like Nice Guy Kingdom. Yeah. Can we be friends with them? They seem reasonable.
Yeah, yeah. There's those, I think there was one more that I'm forgetting, but there's like, the first book is basically them like going around and like collecting one party member from each kingdom.
Yeah.
And so like, you know, okay, sure. It's not a great series, but it's entertaining enough, you know, especially if you're new to fantasy. But then like at the end, they have like the big fight with the Dark God and they win. And then they have the Mandalorian series, which is basically the same story. Because it's like, now we have to fight not the Dark God again, but like it turns out the Dark God was actually a tool of a bigger, darker god. Yep. I think they're called the Prophecies or whatever.
The biggerest, and, darkerest.
Yeah, yeah. And so now they've picked another one, and the Light Prophecy just gets to keep Garion because he's like the, you know, he's still alive, right?
Sure. Why not?
He's to keep, yeah. So that's definitely a series that feels like it probably should have just been standalone. I mean, granted, I can't begrudge the author too much. If someone is like, give me money for more of what you just gave me, I'm like, okay, sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be a total sellout. I would make just the worst sequels as long as it gave me money. So, you know, I can't judge too harshly on that account.
I do enjoy money. This is true.
Yeah. All this talking, there's just more and more series that I want to talk about when we're talking about like series bloat and stuff like that. Because you're just talking about generic fantasy, and I'm like, let's step on a landmine here. Let's talk about Game of Thrones.
Oh boy.
Because I think Game of Thrones has a real bad case of world bloat as we get farther into the series. And I know a lot of people love that series. I was in love with it when I first read it. I've read all of the books twice, so I am a dedicated fan of the books, or at least I was. But that series has some problems with how big its world gets, and I think a pretty poor use of multiple POVs as we get deeper in.
Yeah, especially in the fourth and fifth book, even more so.
Yeah.
Right? Like, the fifth book really feels like, I don't even know if I would qualify it as series bloat. It just feels like it's killing time.
Mm, yeah.
Right? I can't think of another reason for an author to do this, but it feels like there's a plot thing that's going to happen later.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't have it happen in this book, so let's just have a bunch of random like travel montages.
Yeah,
right?
The walking simulator. I think the real answer is that, you know, it starts with printing and ends with money. But from a story perspective, you know, maybe that's not the case. Maybe George R. R. Martin just feels like there's really something there to tell. But I feel like there's a good way to use multiple POVs in these big worlds to kind of make the world feel richer, which is something I wanted to touch on that I think Honorverse does amazingly well. And then I think there are poor ways to use it where you end up feeling like, I felt this way a lot in Game of Thrones, where I just wanted to skip portions of the book, mm-hmm. because we got to a character that was really boring. In the early books, it's like, I want to skip ahead. I want to see what Tyrion's up to. You know, I want to see what, you know, what Ned Stark is doing. You know, I want to get to the characters that see those actions. And it's worse in the last book because he split the POVs into two different books. So the books cover the same period of time, but from different characters' perspective. So some of my favorite characters just weren't in the fifth book.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's just like, Tyrion's in here, but he's really boring. And I won't spoil anyone, but they managed to make Tyrion boring, at least in my opinion.
I second that.
I don't want anyone to like kill me for Game of Thrones spoilers in the books. They managed to make Tyrion boring, and when you make Tyrion boring, there wasn't a whole lot of characters left that I was really particularly interested in. I think the most interesting was probably Arya. I think she was in that book. Maybe she wasn't. Mm-hmm. But it did feel like her storyline was kind of killing time while everyone else had to catch up to, you know, whatever is going to happen at the end. I have a pretty solid idea of how the book series is going to end, but, you know, I could be wrong. George R. R. Martin has surprised me at least once in that book series.
Well, I have a pretty strong feeling that the book series will never actually end.
Oh, they'll just they'll get someone to ghostwrite for him if he dies first, you know, like the Wheel of
possible.
Time.
I would be really, I mean, at this point, I'm going to be surprised if the sixth book is ever published, let alone the seventh.
Mm-hmm.
What really confused me about the fifth book, and I do have to give some spoilers here, on the bright side, I don't think this character is even in the TV show, so don't worry about that.
Yeah.
But in the fifth book, right, so we're like, in theory, we are accelerating the grand politics, right? Like, we are getting closer to the, everyone knows it's coming, the return of Daenerys to Westeros.
Yep.
And so here's what we're going to do. In the fifth book, we are going to introduce a completely new character who we've never met, and he's a Dornish prince, and he's going to have his, like, entire journey in the fifth book, and then at the end, he's going to die. And it's like, having made basically no impact on the story, it's like, why was that character even here?
Yeah. It felt like his group was like a D&D party. Like, he was like a fifth edition D&D party set off to go fight a dragon, and then the dragon murders them. Like, well, that was fun. I'm glad we used up book space on these massive books on this guy. Whatever his name is, I don't even remember his name. It was just kind of...
A Dornish man.
Yeah, one of the weirdest inclusions in a story that has so many characters that are important. Like, you need to know who these people are and what they're doing, and then they just threw in this random element that just felt so out of place.
Mm-hmm.
It's also just, like, book four essentially ends on a cliffhanger for Brienne. Like, we don't actually know what happened to her. From the TV series, I know that she's okay, but at the end of book four, like, she might have been dead, right? It was one of those, like, it fades to black right before she's executed. And then it's like, okay, what happened to Brienne? And book five doesn't have Brienne in it.
Yep, you just have to wait. I mean, although, I do feel that George R. R. Martin has traded too heavily on the first book surprise of... Spoilers, once again, you probably shouldn't be listening to this portion if you don't know anything about Game of Thrones. But they kill Ned Stark. Where, like, that was a big surprise to me. That was, I think, a very good piece of gotcha. Because we all expected, it was all set up, Ned Stark's going to take the Black, he'll go join Jon Snow, we'll have, like, bonding between those two characters, and we'll, like, reveal Jon Snow's secret past, da-da-da-da. Then he's dead. And it's like, that's really cool. I was really a big fan of that. It subverted all the fantasy tropes that I expected in a good way. But I feel like George R. R. Martin has just been trading on that and then kind of re-upped it on the Red Wedding.
Mm-hmm.
Just traded on, it's like, anyone can die. It's like, not really anyone can die. Anyone without a POV can die. The only POV character that died, I think, is Ned Stark, or characters that were introduced to die.
There's a couple of characters who were introduced in a prologue and then die in the prologue with their POV. And then there's the Dornish guy in book five, right? Like, he's introduced in book five, and then he dies. And, like, he was a POV character, but he's also, like, I don't think there were that many fans of Dornish guy. I could be wrong. But I don't think a lot of fans were really clamoring for him.
But it's like, Jon Snow is like, oh my god, is Jon Snow dead? It's like, no, Jon Snow's not dead. It's like, of course he's not dead. Like, especially he can't die at this point in the book. That just wouldn't work. And also, George R. R. Martin's not going to kill off. He's not going to kill off Tyrion, at least not until the very end. He's not going to kill off Jon Snow. Like, we know those two characters are pretty much safe until the finale.
Mm-hmm. Right. Also, he was like standing next to a lady who we know can bring people back from the dead.
Yeah. Also, can we just touch real quick on the really bizarre magic system of Game of Thrones, where like there was a dude running around resurrecting Robin Hood, and no one thought that was weird.
Right.
It's just like, yeah, he just comes back from the dead. That's normal. And it's like, what? This is like a gritty, low fantasy setting where magic is just returning. How is this not noteworthy?
I was just thinking, you'd think that all the lords would hear about this. They would go capture that guy, bring him in, and be like, we're going to keep you on retainer, you know, just in case.
Yeah, or just like, you know, people would start like trying to hoover up the red priests, who are apparently the ones that have the power of like bring you back to life nonsense. But sorry, that was a little off topic. Just thought it was weird. Yeah. We can get back to talking about the story. There's so much to go into here. I have lots of nerd stuff that I like to talk about, and so few opportunities to really get into it. So I'm just excited to be here.
Yeah, no, but I do think Game of Thrones is a pretty classic example of it's a story that starts off, you know, really well plotted, and then just kind of gradually, as the world expands, gets, you know, bigger than a book can contain.
Yeah.
Sorry,
go on.
I was gonna say, I don't think it has to be that way, but I can see why it's challenging to avoid that, especially if you're like, you know, if you're a big nerd world builder and you really want to like show how everything is connected, right? And mm-hmm. how you want to try to dispel the idea that your setting takes place in like you know, a map that everything out of it is like unloaded computer graphics, right?
Yeah. I would like to bring up now just kind of a like a comparison of, I think, how to do POVs really well is the Honorverse. Mm-hmm. Now the Honorverse, for those of you who aren't familiar, is once again, it's this like hard sci-fi, military sci-fi space opera. It has, 13 main series books. And I think it has this massive compilation of side stories that happen set in the same universe. I think it's easily over 30 books now take place in this universe. So this is a big series of books and a big world. But in the main series, the vast majority of the POV is spent with our main character, Honor Harrington, as she continues her adventures as a member of a navy, a space navy. But the way that David Weber uses alternate POVs is to really expand the universe and humanize characters that Honor doesn't really have a chance to meet in person. Mm-hmm. Like for the first several books, we spend the prologue with the leaders of the People's Republic of Jerks. Is pretty much
those guys.
They're basically the villains for the first like six books, but we spend time with them to learn their motivations, to kind of humanize them a little bit. Like, they're still evil people, but like there's a kind of an understandable reason why they're doing what they're doing. And so we spend that time with those folks. When the villains start becoming a little more gray, we spend like at least a couple POVs a book with these folks, kind of, you know, understanding what's going on, because there's really no way for Honor as a first person character to like get in there and learn that stuff. And then the other part that really stood out to me is there's a point in the book where a space station, like a really important space station, is getting blown up. And this is like a super big turning point in the book series. It's a really good point. But the David Weber uses multiple POVs to kind of, he basically does four like mini chapters of different people who are standing on the space station as it's exploding, to kind of like drive home the different people that exist in this world and like this tragedy that's touching on each of them. Like my favorite was the one who, where this like this father is there with his kid, and he like sees the explosion coming towards them. And like that kind of thing, like really just, it makes it feel more like the world is full of real people rather than like a cast of like maybe 10 characters and then a bunch of like mannequins. That kind of stuff really, it really works for me. Maybe it doesn't work for everyone, but I think it's really, it keeps the main cast is definitely where most of our time is spent, but we get to see more of the world, and it's a way to gradually expand into this massive universe. Like, you think Game of Thrones world is big. This place, the Honorverse, is literally its own universe, as far as size and scope. So I highly recommend anyone who likes sci-fi, check it out. There are some problems with it. If we have time, we'll go into it. But I plan on some point writing a little post, kind of talking about how the Honorverse uses world building and maybe other parts problems that I have with it.
Well, Ari, you I mean, you bring up a really good point that, like, whenever you get a POV shift, I mean, I don't want to ever wonder in a series if I, like, I really need to, like, focus on this as, like, a new main character. You know, mm-hmm. I like it when main characters are established, and then if POV switches, it's still, like, maybe in a story that's, like, complementing or supporting what the main character is doing. There's a series that I read a while ago, kind of obscure, but maybe some people saw the weird movie adaptation. The first book was called Night Watch. Did any guys?
Yeah, I saw the movie version of that.
Yeah,
very strange. The
movie, I've sworn I've read this
book. Yeah, the movie was really weird. The series is called The Watch Saga, and there's Night Watch, Day Watch, Twilight Watch, Final Watch. And I think it was supposed to stop there, but then I assume he got more money, and then he wrote two more. But I only read those four. But the point was that the first book, like, primarily had the point of view from Anton Gorodetsky. And then after that, when you got point of view shifts, they were just people kind of on one of the two forces. But Anton was always still kind of involved, like, tangentially. So, like, you could kind of just learn more about what was going on without losing somebody that you already attached to, you know? Yeah. Instead of just, like, shifting. I mean, we talk about that Game of Thrones idea, but I feel like POV is best when it complements the characters that you've already invested a lot of time with in a series and that you want to stick around.
Yes, I would definitely agree with that. I think it's very important to kind of establish kind of how early in your book series, establish what different POVs are going to mean.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because, like, that's the exact what you said, it's the exact problem I had in books like Game of Thrones. Like, I don't know how invested to get in these characters, or if I really need to remember their names, or if it's just, like, they're there to show me what's happening where the main characters aren't,
right?
And Game of Thrones, I think, really has a problem with that, because sometimes, like, the Dornish guy, they'll just drag him out through a whole book, and it's like, well, this person isn't actually important, but I spent a lot of time with them, so, like, I feel like maybe I should, like, care about them or know more about them. And the answer is really, no, you don't need to.
Yeah, if you put in all that effort to read, you want to have payoff, you know? Like, you want to feel like it's contributing and that you're not wasting your time.
Yep.
It also, like, when you're doing multiple point of views in a long series like this, it's very important to, like, make sure that they really support what your book is about. And for the most part, in the early Game of Thrones books, they definitely do, because the early Game of Thrones books are about the intrigue and struggles of a group of noble houses, right? Like, that's what they're about. And so having character, like, points of view from multiple houses is really important, which is incidentally, like, why it feels like Dorne just comes out of nowhere, because for the first, like, four books, Dorne doesn't have a POV character.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, all, I think we're mostly, and Tyrell is the other one that feels like a super, like, not really an entity for a while.
Yeah,
because they also don't have one. But from, and this is like, you know, your mileage will vary on this, but every time you introduce, like, a new character, especially one who is, like, outside of the main action, there's a pretty good chance that, like, some of your audience won't be that interested. Like, I actually really didn't like Daenerys. Like, I just found her chapters to be kind of boring most of the time, because she was so far away from the action of the story that I cared about. Yep. Now, obviously, Daenerys is for the most part a pretty popular character, so I don't think Martin has to lose too much sleep on that account. but, you know, for when you're writing your own story, I always recommend to try to keep your characters, like, as engaged with whatever the thing your story is about as possible. Which the Honorverse does very well, because in the Honorverse, like, the scope of the books, like, slowly expands, I would say.
I would say that I actually do think you're not alone there with the Daenerys chapters of the books. I certainly agree with you. I think a lot of people like Daenerys as a character more from the show than from the books.
Mm-hmm.
Because the actress is quite good. I think the show does a better job of making what's happening where Daenerys is feel more important than mm-hmm. I think the book did. I think the books did a kind of poor job of making Daenerys feel connected to the main story. So it just kind of feels like we're kind of, you know, twiddling our thumbs while she, you know, frees the slaves and then governs very poorly over a bunch of cities.
Yeah, I had actually kind of forgotten that, like, in the early part of the books, they were talking about sending, like, assassins to kill her, because, like, by later on, it feels like they take place in, like, separate worlds. Yeah. They're, like, so far apart, yeah. It's hard for me to imagine they could actually do that.
Yeah, it also, like, advantage of Honorverse over something like Game of Thrones. It's just the modes of transportation, right? So, mm-hmm. like, it's very easy to understand how characters actually can get to visit each other if they're far apart in the Honorverse, because they have faster than light travel in spaceships. Whereas in, when someone's really far away from each other in Game of Thrones, they have walking horses and boats, which
except in
are
the TV, except
a
in
bit
the,
slower.
Except in the TV show, where apparently they have jetpacks and, you know, hypersonic speed ravens.
I've been told that the show is somewhat disregarding the map at this point. The characters are just kind of showing up where they need to. I saw some articles from Polygon about it.
Yeah.
I haven't kept up with the show at all, though, since I can no longer smugly say that I knew that was going to happen because I read the books.
What's even the point of that?
Yeah, I don't get it.
Right.
My book reading master race policy has been, you know, besmirched by these upstart movie upstart showrunners who dare to do something different.
All right. So speaking of upstarts, actually, we are out of time. I'm sure we have more series we can
talk
about.
That's a good segue. I like that.
So Ari, thank you again for joining us for this second episode.
It was my pleasure.
Those of you at home, if anything that we said piqued your interest or perhaps angered you, if we said something bad about your favorite Game of Thrones character, you can email us at podcast@mythgrants.com. Otherwise, we will talk to you next week.
If this episode resonated with you, post a review on iTunes to increase the range of our spells. There was a dragon with a pointy tail. He was bigger than a whale, and his breath was terrible. He scared the princess when he came around. Tried to burn the castle down, but she caught him by his tail. Then she tied him to a tree so the dragon couldn't fly. She told him he was mean, and it made the dragon cry. When he finally apologized, she offered him some tea. He accepted it graciously. Now he visits every weekend with the princess.
This has been the Mythgreant Podcast, opening closing theme, The Princess Who Saved Herself, by Jonathan Coulton.